Hi everyone, just a heads up before the episode. We have some colourful language in our chat with this week's guest. So if you have children within earshot, you might want to press pause and listen to the show when you are on your own.
Hello everybody and welcome to episode 84 of Run to the Hills podcast, sponsored by Cheer Charge. Cheer Charge have been fueling adventures with real food made with real ingredients since 2012. Go and check them out at www.cheercharge.co.uk. This week, I have been mostly living on their Jaffa Orange protein 20 gram bars. Oh. They are a solid block of tired mum energy.
I've still not had one. I really, really would love to try one of these.
Get on the hotline to Cheer Charge Towers and say, do you know, Gareth Ritz have not had a protein bar. That's, you need that. It's going to help your knee.
I had some peanut protein left over from Valencia Marathon, so I thought, well, I better give this a go. So I put it in some yogurt. Oh, it wasn't very good. It's like a really, really strong peanut flavour. So, but I thought, well, protein, yeah, help my knee, so let's give it a go.
How are you doing? Tell me your...
I've had a big bike week, over six hours of volume on the bike, which...
6 hours, Gary? It's practically like... Geraint Thomas volume training there.
But you can just consume it, can't you? The only thing I didn't like was, say, Sunday was a two-hour session. And for me, that's a long time on the bike. And it had these long long intervals. And they weren't particularly hard for the actual effort, but they were like 20-minute chunks. And it was good. I had all my Cheer Charge bars, I had my electrolytes and everything. I had Netflix queued up. I was pretty kind of set up on Sunday. But yeah, it was 6.5 hours. And you just don't feel beaten up. You've probably got this underlying fatigue, which you probably maybe myself, at least at the moment, I'm not really appreciating, but it was awesome. And I got out with Rex for a few, so I'm back running, everybody. So that's good.
Now get to the moaning bits. You're back running. How is it?
That's fine. You know, it's funny. It starts off not great. And like Rex will drag me out the door. So that first maybe half a mile.
Oh, I have the same. If I take the dogs and we go, it's quarter of a mile to where I can let them off the lead. And yeah. They are like... rabid wolves trying to get to the track. Yeah. And I'm like, oh!
Exactly, yeah. But yeah, he dragged me out the door and the first mile is pretty much all downhill. So it's double whammy. But once, yeah, it does improve as I'm running. And
have you ever done any pre-run like activation? Can I suggest
What do you think?
When you mean activation, do you mean snacking, Eddie?
Yeah, cup of tea. That's my activation.
I'll send you a few little exercises you can do while the kettle's boiling. And it might be worth theragunning your IT band in your quad as well.
The IT band is, I've been back to Form Roland, and as soon as you do Mr. Google, IT band's a very contentious issue with
with a foam roller. Yeah.
Because you talk about, as soon as you talk about knees, sometimes they say it's your IT band could be part of the problem. So yeah, I've been foam rolling that. It's actually really painful. that's the first thing.
It's really, really painful. Tiny bit, because it really aggravates it too if it's a bit sore.
But it's fine, you know. So I've been doing that, but you do a YouTube search and the two results that come back, one says do it, one says don't foam roll your IT band ever. So conflicting information, but I have to admit, I'm doing maybe 30 seconds to a minute on each one, then flipping over, then doing some other work foam rolling. And I have to say, it's improving. I can't really argue with that.
Gary?
Yeah, I've got one of those massage guns.
Get that in your IT band. That's that, because you can really get from the knee right up. It's a lot less, especially if you use the, abusive as the foam roller.
Okay.
I would Theragun, and I Theragun before I went running too.
This is the challenge, isn't it? It's all these pre-activation. It's before I've done a run, I could have been faffing on for 20 minutes. So
yeah, you could.
And I need to, this is logistically where I live. If I don't cross the road, it's 7 o'clock in the morning or whatever, I can't remember what time it is. The traffic's too busy. So anything that slows me down from getting outside is, I can't remember what the time is exactly, but I can't fast forward. Clearly. Yeah, I need to move to the other side of the A181, then I'll be fine. Get straight in the Dean. But I have entered a race too, which is good. The Swaledale Marathon, which is, they call it a marathon. It's 24 miles, but I think it's as hard as a marathon. And I've never, it's really, this point in my running is brilliant because I used to be so precious about marathon distance and above. When I was chasing 100 marathons, everything had to be 26 miles. If it wasn't 26 miles, I just wouldn't entertain it. And this one has always been on my radar. Loads of friends have done it and said it's fantastic. And I've been like, no, not doing that. It's like, it seems like all that effort for not doing a marathon. But now that I'm like not chasing numbers and counting them anymore, it's like, brilliant, we'll do it. And so yeah, entered that. It's the week before the summer spine, I think. So that time of year, about 24 miles.
Are you just trying to steal my thunder? So just when we like start talking about my race, you're going to be like, let me spend the whole episode talking about...
But yeah, that's exactly what but I think anything else happened? No, didn't go to the lake.
You're doing a little bit of jogging. Are you gonna do a little bit more, keep sort of loading a little bit more?
Yeah, well, this week, so I've been out already. I'll probably do some strides tonight, go out and do a couple of miles, then some strides. And then, yeah, just increasing. I need to ultimately ease off the bike because I can't do my usual running volume with 6-7 hours on the bike on top of that too. So that will be interesting how I manage that because I really...
Do you need to do double run days already as you're just coming back? Why don't you do bike tonight?
Yeah, but today's fine. But usually it's a commute, so I'll run to work and back, and it's not big. It's like 2 miles or a mile and a half the run home, so it's not huge. But I am a mileage junkie, Eddie. I do like to tick up the miles while things are going well. Yeah, I'll probably run twice a day, and
of course, until it goes wrong, and then you'll go, "Should have listened to you, Eddie."
Anyway, that's enough for me. I've seen pictures of you with an ice pack on. What the hell? What's going on?
Stop it. I'll start the whole story. Here we go, people. It's 2 miles worth of running. I'm going to entertain you. So last week, well, let's be fair. The last like 4 weeks, maybe, I've had this little niggle in my ankle. Not really sure what it is. To be honest, I've just totally ignored it because it's not really, it's just been there and it's been okay. I've started running and it's gone off and I've forgotten about it. Anyway, then last week started hurting. Around, you know, when an injury like starts hurting around normal life, that is bad, like driving and putting it into just a ski boot to just ski. I was like, oh, this is really painful. Oh, so anyway, I sort of adapted a few sessions to see if that would help. So we also had a load of snow and the temperatures plummeted to like minus 10. So I tried to run a bit on snow. Bad idea. Really hurt. Came inside, put my Asics Glide on, which have a heel about the size of my hand, and I could run on the treadmill with no pain, easy. So I just ran the treadmill, and then I was meant to do an uphill session, and I was like, that's when it's pulling, is uphill. So I did it speed on the treadmill on Saturday, and then after I did that on Saturday, I went to do my recovery run, and I couldn't run. I literally couldn't move through the car. I was like, oh no. So walked the dogs, came back. I was like, shh, ooh, almost swallowing a podcast. Anyway, slammed some ice on it. Right, what am I going to do? So I'm very good with injuries. I have no problem in, I push myself really, really hard. So if my body says it's hurting, I really respect that. Some people say you could have done that a little bit earlier, Eddie, but I realize I pushed it.
Maybe, yeah.
I'm going to go back to what we were talking about in the fact that when you said, oh, I find pre-activate, you know, all the pre-activation, all the like Theragunning, all that stuff, I don't have time. And I know that that's my downfall as well, is that I've just been like, so busy the past month with everything that's going on that I've just been like, do sessions, and then get get changed, you know, hardly have time to wash my hands. You know, it's like quick, get changed. Oh, get a clean pair of pants on. You're lucky after that. Been so busy and I've neglected and I've ignored this going, it's fine. And I've ignored the little things like, you know, just a little stretch, a little pre-warm up, a little cool down. I don't have time. So my body's come back and gone, bit me on the bum and gone, if you don't listen to me, I'm going to stop you. So it stopped me. So Sunday we had a mega, I mean, normal life busy. The weekend was freaking mad. The kids ski raced all over the world, it felt like. Bryn and I like just had to like, oh my God, it was just, and it was minus 10. The snow was really, And people will be like, if they love skiing, they'll be like, you're so lucky. But you take them to these ski places and then you have to, there's literally like 4 or 5 hours where you're waiting outside on a piece somewhere with the wind howling around. You've got your buff, like, and you slowly, the cold like seeps up and you can't really go anywhere because you know, they're skiing like the one on Saturday was skiing. That's really icy. Kids were falling. It was really, really steep. So you've got to be there. They're only little. Once they're 14, 15, I'm out of there.
It's not like going on holiday, is it? If you're there as a parent.
Yeah, you're there kind of. Anyway, so we had, oh my God, we had such an epic, such a busy weekend. But I did change my session. And then Saturday, I cut the second run. I was like, and of course, coach went, well, why did you run? Why didn't you go on your bike? And I was like, I know that. You don't need to point that out to me. But I realised that. So I took Sunday off, but I did have to put it in a ski boot, which was awful. And I of course, Google. I was like, it's Kelly's tendonitis. It's over. You know, it's over. I've pushed too hard. Mm. I don't, it's all over. But and unlike you, I go straight to my physical therapist. I have a great little network. They all know each other and they play golf together and they discuss my various ailments at various points over the years. And then I go round them. Oh, yes, Eddie, we know. We've seen so-and-so and physio. I had seen her on Sunday, but I was like, don't talk business on the piece. That's not fair. She's watching a kid. Yep. And then go, just have a quick look at my ankle. She was brilliant. And then I went to the chiropractor. He's this big Australian guy. And I was so twisted, which I always am after the winter from skiing, like a Austrian ski guide, like that, ski. And then Benzini's knees. And then the running, I guess the different, like trying to stay alive.
There's a big cracking when he...
Yeah, so he like, he could not crack me. He's like, the muscles in your back are so like stiff. I cannot get the back to move. So he was like, he had to like lean me forward. He's enormous Australian, like looks like some sort of sheep farmer. And he had to like get his whole body weight to like get, oh my God, it's quite, before it happens, you know, it's going to happen. It's quite terrifying. You're like, what is this going to, anyway, he was like, he also got my ankle. He's like, it's not, I knew it wasn't, you know, when something doesn't click.
Yeah.
He got it all moving. Both the physio and the chiro, like it's not actually, Eddie, being a bit dramatic, it's not in the Achilles spine. The calf is really, really tight. But they both think, this is such a boring injury, that where my ski boot has been rubbing on my ankle bone, it's caused like this scar tissue to build up, protect the tendon that holds in the Achilles tendon. There's a word for it, don't know what it is. And so that then is stopping the Achilles and the calf working because it's like blocking the movement.
Yeah.
So they both put their fingers in it. Oh, sweet Lord. And honestly, today they also did the test where you put your foot against the wall and then you push your knee into the wall and you see how much flexion you can get and they measure it. Yeah. You should be able to take your foot away for like 10 to 12 centimeters and then get your knee to touch the wall. You should try this, Gary.
Oh, yeah,
so my left leg, I could get 11 centimeters that the foot was away from the wall and then you touch knee down. And then the right one, the bad one, I couldn't even get 0 centimeters.
Oh.
No flexion in it at all.
You have to send me a link to try this out.
So anyway, it's almost gone within 24 hours of a bit of treatment, 2 days rest. Yeah, it's almost gone. So I'm better to not do anything than to try and concentrate. I'm a big believer when you've got an injury is that you must rest it and the initial rest period for like however long, so that give your body the energy to heal the injury. You carry on eating really well and you like almost let your nervous system relax and go, I've got that extra energy. What I've got that extra, I imagine it like this. I've got this extra energy. I'm going to let it, where shall I put it? Oh,
I think all those things. Try and get a bit more sleep, increase your better quality food.
I already feel like I almost feel like, the last like 72 hours that the body's gone, oh, Eddie, you needed a little bit of rest. And it feels like yesterday, before I had all that treatment, walking the dogs up a little mountain path, I had to turn around, it was sore. And this morning I've just walked them and there's no pain. It's amazing. Awesome. So I will carry on. I don't think...
Maybe shall go and see a physio.
I'm going to do... That's why I'm telling the story, really. I think I might have a whole week off running and just really let it settle.
Yeah.
But I'm scared if I go on the bike, I have no self-control. So I'm almost better to totally rest because I'll get on the bike and I'll be like, there's no pain. But then I'd be so annoyed if I got off the bike and it hurt again.
Yeah.
So kind of like I'm going to go to the gym this afternoon in line with the cafe opening times.
Oh,
and go do a bit of core, a bit of band work, keep the glutes working, and then go and have a recovery smoothie because I feel that I'll need that. So
sounds nice.
A little setback, but there's always little setbacks in your journey. And I'm a big believer of you handle those, you treat them as you would do your running program, you know, you do your ice, your Theragunning, whatever, your massage, you respect, it's part of the running journey. Everybody has niggles. Everybody has little blips. I used to get really upset about injuries and niggles and stuff. And now I think I'm just old and I'm just like, it's going to happen. It's not the end of the world.
My little setback, although what it's done is it's made me remember back to a time when I used to foam roll and do lots of mobility stuff. And to be honest, I think with all like the last probably 2 years, I've took my eye off that. And I look back at some old kind of Garmin data and I was a lot more diligent a few years ago.
Can I just say though, I don't think you need to put your foam rolling on Strava.
All goes on. Everything goes on Strava. I think I might trigger somebody somewhere, so I put it on there. Just like, even if I walk the dog for a mile, it's on Strava.
It's all on Strava.
Well, I didn't know when I
put my dog walk on Strava. And I think, God, that's probably another 30 miles of wandering around the tracks.
I stick it all on. But when I foam rolled my hamstrings, I could see my quads firing like electrical twitches, only my left leg, which is where my knee has the issue.
So I really wish you'd just go and get some physio on that. Or just go and get a massage. Get someone to get their elbows in that. Also, with things like the IT band, it's very hard to get into where it gets sticky against the quad because it's so painful. You'd need, if somebody else gets in there and releases it, you can then maintain it yourself. But to actually do that bit of release, I think only women can do that. I don't think men can take that pain. Anyway, Gary and I have moaned enough.
How long did that go on for?
Need a cup of tea. If you've got a niggle anyway, we're here for you. We're here for you. Rest, ice, compression, elevation. And I went, last little story, but I went into the pharmacy because the French medical system is all insurance-wise. They have incredible array. You can't buy like paracetamol and Nurofen in the supermarket. You have to go and ask for it. Yeah. They have an array of medicines for anything. Literally, I love the queue because I just stand there looking at like all the creams and everything. And so I went and I said, this is what I've got and I've got this bit. So she gave me like this incredible cream. I reckon I could sell it on the back market. I put it on and like all the swelling has gone down, wow. All the red has gone. It's like, I don't know what this is. I'm going to put it all over my body and see what happens. Anyway. People are doing much better things, though they probably have now got some pretty incredible niggles as well. Maybe I'll send Kim and Lisa my cream and say, try this on your quads. We had the two big races in the Lake District this weekend. We had the Lakes Traverse and the Northern Traverse. I found myself dot watching in the middle of the night when I woke up to see how the girls were doing on the Northern Traverse. But record-breaking times for both the men and the women.
That's right.
Kim Collison won the Northern Traverse. Nice to see him finishing after his spine attempts. That put a few demons to bed. And then Lisa Watson broke the women's record in 52 hours, 52 minutes. And a friend of the show, Elaine Bison, was second, 56 hours, 21 minutes. And Lisa, I watched her finish. She was still running.
She was strong, wasn't she?
She was still running. She looked so strong. I was like, that's my dream. That's my dream. So,
I wonder how many people took a pebble. I think Wainwright said, did he take a pebble?
Yeah, I saw them collecting a pebble. I was wondering then in like 100 years' time, and they're looking at the beach and they'd be like, why are there these stones?
It doesn't have to be that weird. Does it have to be...
And then in the lakes. Oh, I don't know. That's a big question. I think it's probably a nicer route that way because you get to do the Lake District first on fresh legs.
And so
all the climbing's in the first quarter.
Usually you'll have the wind on your back too, so that'd be good.
Oh, that's good knowledge. That's some good geography in action there, Gary.
Oh, yes.
We also had the Lakes Traverse, which was the first 100K of the route. I was super excited to watch this because another friend of the show and friend of mine, Katie Sars, Saberstein, was doing her second race post-baby, and I messaged her during the week, and she was quite nervous. She said it's the longest she's run since her Bob Graham attempt, which she did in 17 hours, 5 years ago. She wasn't sure how it was going to go. Do you know what? She won it. She broke the course record by 4 hours in 11 hours 07. And the men's winner, Daniel Weller, he was only 90 seconds ahead in 11 hours 05. And they had like literally had a sprint finish. I said to her, did you let them win? You know, did you let the man like? but she, before that, we'd already talked about her coming on the show to talk about her postnatal comeback. I thought that would be really helpful for lots of people listening. And now we're going to have the great story of the race too. So in the next couple of weeks, look out for that interview. And well done, Katie. What a comeback. She's taking it really slow and steady and can't wait to see it. Don't know what she's doing next.
But not a trail run or an ultra run. There's a few people down at Manchester Marathon this weekend and it sounds like they had a great time. And I think it was distance was correct. But a listener of the show, Adam Kirkup, did it in 3 hours and 47 minutes. And I think he's looking forward to getting back on the trails now. And a friend of mine, actually, Kieran Walker, I'm pretty sure Kieran.
Yes, you talked about him. You talked about him last week.
Yeah, I messaged him, talked about him last week. And he got 2:19, Eddie. 2:19.
What's that average pace? Is that like 5 minutes?
Oh, yeah, it's going to be, five something. And I'm pretty sure that's then he's got the Commonwealth Games qualifying standard. And then now he's aiming for London 2022. So this in October. So that'd be really good to see where he's at. But like I said last week, he does everything. We're Facebook friends and he's got his he's a coach. He's got a coaching group. So you see the work Kieran puts in and he lifts heavy, he form rolls, he does everything and lots of it too. And pay a dividend, 2:19. So I just can't imagine that kind of speed, but he's quite a young guy. So lots to come too from Kieran. It's really exciting to see.
In Perth in Scotland, we have the Anglo-Celtic Plate 100K, which is a home international race between Scotland, England and Wales. It's 61 laps of a 1-point-something mile loop of the North Inch Park in Perth. I've done it. Truly one of the most horrendous days of my life, running 62 laps of a very cold Scottish park. But we had record-breaking course records for both the men and the women. Matt Dickinson in 6 hours 39 for England and Joe Murphy for Scotland in 7 hours 41. Debbie Martin-Gonzani said the conditions were really good.
This week, we had an amazing chat with Tom Garrod. I first heard of Tom with the Lonlas Ultra and he ran it. I don't want to spoil it for anybody. He ran it one direction and turned around and went back again. I thought, wow, that's pretty amazing. But that's the first time he really came on my radar. Then do a bit of research, have a chat with him, you scratch your surface and you think, my goodness me, this guy has had and is having...
It's all the people on the show, isn't it? You're like, actually, the running is often the icing on the cake, and it's the bit underneath the foundations where people have lived amazing or sad or incredible lives and have come out as these ultra runners.
But what a journey Tommy's on, and he shares his story really well. Yeah, hope you enjoy it.
Welcome to the podcast. So I'm going to start talking because these two are already chatting away like old chum. We are delighted that Tom Garrod has joined us on the show this week. Hi, Tom. You know the intro. I don't need to say it. How are you? Where are you? And have you been for a run today?
I'm Tom Garrod. I'm living the dream. I'm in London. And yes, I have.
You have, you know, so many, because we record this quite early, but very rarely people have done a run, but you have. What did you do? How was it? How are you feeling?
Yeah, I'm all right, actually. I'm all right. Yeah, I went for a nice, easy, like, 6 miler, so it wasn't too strenuous to run the canal. We live in Stratford in East London, so it was just around the canal and back, so it was, you know, nice and easy. It's a little bit sunny, but it's still, like, bitter, but it's nice. It's nice, fresh.
Sounds like a dreamy start to the day, a little 6 miler down by the canal.
To me, 6 miler, Debs always says if it's not a 10 miler, she doesn't count it. But to me, a 6 miler, that's it. That's nice. You feel you've done then, don't you?
Well, normally when I do, if I'm in like full training, and then it's kind of like the 6 miler is kind of like the easy run of the week, where it's do an easy run of the week, and then you kind of, you work on form and technique, and then the other runs are more kind of like hill reps, interval sessions, back-to-back long runs. And yeah, and then that's it really. But if you have a nice, easy 6 miler, it depends on the time on your feet. You could do a 10 miler, but you could do it faster than the 6. So
mentally though, I always find like heading out the door with like, no, there's no prescriptive session. Just go out, just go running.
Well, I like it that you, I think one of the only times I listened to you, Eddie, when you said about your recovery runs to be under an hour. And if I was to do a 10 miler, like Debs was saying, it's not.
10 miler's not a recovery run. When people say that, I'm like, that's not a recovery run. 10 no, miles, you're dipping into stuff there.
Can we talk about your sport and journey, Tom? I know you didn't have the easiest start to life, but yeah, my goodness me.
I put it into a nutshell, the story. It's kind of like when I was 22 months, I was diagnosed with post-viral encephalitis, which is an inflammation of the brain where you can't walk.
Okay.
So, I had that for couple of years, almost died from that. It was very quite aggressive. Went into Great Ormond Street, who are gods over there. Yeah. And they're still living the dream and looking after kids now. So they're one of the best hospitals in the world for children. And then a few years after that, I had what's called undescended testes, where they're too high. So I had to have them lowered down.
Okay.
And every time I mention this to anyone, I always say, please, 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 if you know anyone that has got undescended testicles or had them, please get them checked for testicle cancer. You can go to my website, bustingyourballs.org, for how to check them out. And then that is a big alarm bell for testicle cancer. So please get them checked out if that's the case. So I had undescended testicles, had them lowered down. During school, it was not a great time for me. I sucked academically. I had quite a lot of pressure from family to do well, because my mum was a GP running a surgery, two surgeries. My dad was worked for the government as Department of Trade and Industry. He was a former reporter, a teacher. So academically, I had a bit of pressure. And my sister was kind of like A grade student. She sucked at sport and I really excelled at sport. So I was really good at it. But I got bullied a lot at school and abused by a couple of people that lived opposite the school.
Okay.
I was like pushing people's houses, the door shut, and it wasn't
oh my goodness.
So I had quite a lot of demons, but I was good at hockey, good at martial arts. I got to black belt second dan when I was younger, and that gave me a really good sense of mental strength, because obviously when you do martial arts, it's very kind of zen, it's kind of mind over matter, it's kind of like you respect people and you kind of treat them well before using aggression. Played hockey for one of the best teams in the country, Teddington, but I was on the bench on the first team because it was quite a physical sport back then. It wasn't,
right.
God, you play hockey. God, do you really want to try and play this game? Because it's not, mate. It's fucking physical.
Yeah.
And then played for them, did kind of like triathlon for a bit, trained with the likes of Stuart Hayes, who was the domestique for the Brownlees in 2012. So trained with them and Tim Don, who was Olympian, multiple world champion. But then I kind of got bored of that. My bike got nicked. I got into... Oh. Yeah, exactly. I was kind of one of those naive kids that always kind of really got bored. And then I went into... I thought, right, let's try DJing. Exactly. Hello. What is that?
I did not do...
How long ago? Because you've just in a few minutes there, you've mentioned so many things.
I kind of was looking almost for acceptance when I was younger because... You know, a lot of people didn't give me the time and I was kind of trying to find myself. So, you know, I was doing national cross country, things like that. But then when my bike got nicked, I thought, well, let's try DJing. So went DJing, but started playing in a few clubs in London, Southampton, boat parties, things like that. And then started working in nightclubs, in restaurants, things like that. And then I got very, very bad back pain while I was working in one of the nightclubs in the West End. And I was almost general manager of the club. So I was reporting to the owners and I got back pain, low back pain, upper back pain, chest pain. And then my girlfriend at the time, we went into A&E in East London and they said, right, you can chest x-ray is fine. Blood test is fine after 6 hours waiting A&E. Because unless you're going to drop or you're literally not going to make it through the night, they kind of miss bits.
Yeah,
which is understandable because it's free healthcare, which is the best thing in the world in this country. We're so grateful for that.
Yeah.
A lot of people just go there, I've got a cold, and they go, right, you got to wait. And then if something is really wrong, like I was, then you're in the same boat as everyone else.
Okay, yeah.
So 6 hours later, they said chest x-ray fine, blood test fine. And I rang my mum, who's a GP, was a GP, she was retired, and she was visiting my sister, who lived in Australia with my dad. And I said, look, I never really phoned her because when we were younger, they always used to go, oh, have some magic pills. And they were always Tesco's paracetamol for like 19p. And they always used to do the trick. Just take a couple of paras, you'll be fine. So I rang her and said, look, I've got really bad back pain, really bad chest pain. I'm not too sure what's wrong, but I know that something's wrong. Because embedded into me was, look, don't cry wolf. You know, just try and call me when it's serious. So... long story short, she came back the next day anyway with my dad. We saw my GP, who was the daughter of my GP from when I was younger. So if anyone's been through anything in hospital or gone to another doctor, sometimes bits are missed.
Yeah.
The data sharing in doctors in this country is not great because they miss bits. So you have to kind of fill them in. But her dad was my doctor from when I was born. So he knew about my undescended testes, my encephalitis, all that kind of stuff. So, and basically she said, well, we're not too sure what's going on. All right. Second opinion, went to a second opinion. Second opinion went, okay, Mr. Garrett, Mrs. Garrett, just calm down. We're going to find out what it is. And my mum just literally, I saw her like doing this with her fist and she's quite an introverted person. She's not, she doesn't show emotions too much, but she was like, don't you dare tell me to calm down. This is my son. And I went, wow, like that. I've never seen so much like that. But she knew what it was, but she didn't want to tell me what it was.
Yeah.
And then she basically rang a friend of hers who worked in West Middlesex Hospital, West London Hospital, and said, look, this is my diagnosis of my son. I think he's got this. So literally, I think it was the next day, we had a chest x-ray. Abnormal blood test, abnormal.
Wow.
You're not leaving the hospital. That was on a Friday afternoon, stroke evening, which is okay. Not the time to be sick because I went on a really good time. I thought, should we go on Thursday? No, let's go on a Friday. When there's no one around. So I went into West Mid and they said, okay, they gave me, codeine. Which Nurofen Plus, which everyone's used, and it's all right. But I was in excruciating pain, didn't sleep for a few days, but then went into at Charing Cross while I was officially diagnosed, and they said on the 15th of November 2004, you've got stage 4 cancer. It's really aggressive. It's quite advanced, but we have to give you the legal obligation to freeze any sperm or semen you want to produce kids in the future, because the chemo is so strong it may wreck your chances of fertility. I said, well, let's do it. I'll try and get excited, but I don't know whether it's going to happen because I've just been diagnosed with stage 4. Can you imagine that? Yes, yeah, stage 4 cancer. You know what I mean? It's really like, oh, dearie me. And they said, right, but there's a bad side of it. It takes 3 days to do the test. And I said, well, let's do it. And they said, well, we don't think you're going to make it in 3 days.
Oh, my goodness.
And okay. And so I said, literally, like Richard O'Brien in the Crystal Maze, start the chemo. Let's get it on.
Did you believe them when they said that? Did you, or did, was that like just so unbelievable that?
No, people ask me that. How did you react? I was all right. I was generally all right because it wasn't hard to basically put a straightforward answer on it, because it wasn't denial, because I'd accepted it relatively quickly, because it wasn't anything to do with, you know, like if you've got lung cancer, you smoke. If you've got heart disease, you've got a bad diet. Or if you've got something like that that's self-inflicted.
Yeah.
But then you got people that smoke 100 cigarettes a day, live until they're 100. You got somebody that smokes 15 and unfortunately didn't make it past 40. So, but I think something embedded into me when I was younger, with all the encephalitis, the bullying, all that kind of stuff, embedded me to be quite, you know, strong,
in my mind,
and deal with it. But then on the other side, everyone gave a shit about me in hospital. Literally every single person was saying, "How you doing, Tom? How you doing? Oh, good to see you, Tom. You're looking well."
Yeah.
But on the outside world, but the other side of those doors, my life was a little bit different from that. My position was respected as manager, but I was always quite open and chatty with people. Yeah. But a lot of people came to me because they wanted something rather than morally. And then obviously due to my past, I actually didn't mind the treatment because people cared about me. In the outside world, it wasn't that much. So it was nice. But then when they said it was 3 days, I said, well, let's start the chemo then. I think I flipped a coin and said, right, heads, we do the chemo. Tails, we do the test. Let's go. Let's start the chemo. And then my dad, we did a brain scan because it was all over my body. It was like, I think, quite a few 100,000 cells all over my body, bad cells, cancer cells. And then they did a brain scan and my dad had to deliver the news, and they said, he said, Tom, they found it in your head. They found something that we didn't think you had for so many years. They found your brain in your head. Oh, God.
Oh, wow.
I think that was the only time when I actually got emotional in it, because if it was in the brain, it would have been game over.
Yeah.
Because it was quite a rare diagnosis, because normally, because there's obviously a big chance of abnormally, I didn't get a lump in the testis until 3 months into my treatment.
Okay.
So it was quite a rare diagnosis.
That's a high risk joke, though, Tom. Is that kind of typical of your dad to?
Yeah, I mean,
he's deliver a joke like that.
No, he tries to put a practical positive spin on it, which is good. And that was the only time where I kind of went a bit, okay, like that. I got a bit emotional thinking, God, forgot. You know, the only time I was really worried about the whole treatment. But then I went through chemotherapy where I didn't leave the hospital for like 4 weeks. But I was going around the wards with my drip, with my bum hanging out. that lovely little robe they have.
It's all such good ultra-running preparation, really, isn't it?
I think so, yeah.
No dignity left.
Going around there, just chatting with people, and then I had, I think, a couple of weeks out, and then I had a week in, week out, week in, week out, week in, week out, day in, couple of days out, day in, couple of days out. I wasn't, never really sick. I got loads of nosebleeds. I lost a load of weight. I got amazingly smooth skin. It was amazing. Good. Seriously, I mean, it was beautiful. I was so smooth. I mean, you could put a feather down me. It made any woman jealous. And then I had an intense cycle of stem cell transplant, where they took the stem cells out and then they put them back in. And then they say, you know, would you want to know the side effects? They spoke to me and my mum before and they said, you know, just to let you know, this is a really intense chemotherapy process. We take stem cells out, we put them back in, and then the side effects stop. But the downside of this is you could die. And then the lady that was telling us this, her phone rang in the office and she picked up the phone.
No.
and then she went, sorry, excuse me for 1 second. And then she picked up the phone, hello, doctor, da, da, da. And then me and my mum looked at each other and went,
oh my goodness, mate.
And then she put the phone down and then she went, sorry, where was I? And I went, I was going to die.
Oh, wow.
And then my mum basically went, you handle that really well. I went, I'm quite a sarky, dry person, quite off the cuff. I don't take life too seriously. If it happens, it happens. If it does, there's nothing you can do about it. If you can affect change. If you can't, then you just got to make the best of it.
Yeah.
But I went through the intense cycle. I had 3.5 weeks stem cell takeout, chemo put in, and then they basically said, look, the side effects are going to start, and the room stunk when they put it back in. And then they said, right, side effects, do you want to know? And I went, not really.
No.
Because I'm not going to worry about something that's not going to happen, because even modern day life, people go, oh my God, that's going to happen, that's going to happen.
Yeah, almost if you know, you can almost create that symptom in some ways, maybe.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah.
I mean, you worry about it too much otherwise. You know, if you worry about stuff, then it may not happen anyway. So you just spend all your time worrying about it. I mean, it's like if you hold a bottle of water in your hand for like an hour, it's going to hurt. If you hold it on for the whole day, your arm's going to ache and it's going to feel you can't move it. If you do that thing with something in your head, it's going to take away all the positive stuff that you want to do, because you've just spent all the time thinking about something that may never happen. So I said, no, I want to do exactly the same. Like you go to a fairground and you put your hand in this box with loads of hay in it and you just go, what have I got?
What are you
guys? Oh, I got this. So I got ulcers, everybody. I got ulcers everywhere in my mouth. Nice. So if you got an ulcer in your mouth, times that by upper your lips, lower your lips, all in your cheeks, your tongue.
Yeah.
I couldn't talk for about 3 weeks. So I was talking about,
that must have hurt you, Tom. Your mum must have been like, great.
Yeah, it wasn't. I talk a lot normally when I'm at home with my family, and it was kind of so that my parents could get a word in now. They said, well, you're quite quiet now. It's quite, you're not talking. My God, this is great.
I'm in agony.
Yeah, my dad was all like, oh my God, we didn't know about this. We were just scared. So we're going to bring the whole family. And I had my cousins in. It's great. They could all get a word in. I was like, oh my God, you've got any questions that you want to talk about? But no, it was... I got ulcers, so I couldn't. I had basically a pen and paper where I wrote stuff down.
Okay.
It was, I think there was only one time in the whole treatment before the op where I was in the worst place I've ever been in my life, where I had to take Valium, which is an antidepressant where they give
you
stop going a bit mental. And I think it's important when you do go through stuff to admit that you've been there. Not just to yourself, well, not just to other people, but that may be going through it, but to yourself too. Otherwise, you're living with demons and you haven't dealt with it.
Yeah, good point. So
it wasn't a sign of weakness at all. It was just a sign of like, I was scared of actually topping myself. Because, yeah, they literally took away anything sharp in the room and said, look, he's just a bit okay. Gone. So I had to take Valium. And it was only for a day, only for 24 hours, and then I was okay. But it was so bad, not even Only Fools and Horses made me laugh, and that was just something weird.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, exactly. That's a bit kind of like...
Or even the scene in the bar where they lift the flap up and he falls through the bar.
I'm not laughing at the broom scene with Trigger. All right, Dave?
Oh, goodness.
Now, I've got a broom. I've got 10 new heads, I like that. But then I came out of that, and then one of my best friends who works, who I've known for a while, he came in to see me, and then on that day, I changed rooms. So basically, it was isolation. So okay. When you see people going through COVID, it was like masks. Okay. Everyone has been tested with, you know, like health, temperature wise. Yeah. It was all masks, gloves, everything like that when they came to see me. And the irony of this room is outside the room was Wormwood Scrubs prison, which is quite a harsh prison.
Yeah.
Bad things. So and that was right outside my room. So I was completely, I couldn't move. I couldn't talk. But there was a prison outside my window, which was really good.
With your mind a bit like, what the hell? Where am I? I'm not in that prison, am I?
Hi, boys. I'm in bed for the next 3 weeks. I'm smooth. Yeah, exactly. You know what I mean? No, exactly. There was no soap for me to drop, I'll tell you that.
No,
I came out of that, and then I think there was a bit of time off where I was just trying to get over that. That was in June of the following year. I got diagnosed, and then I had my op on the 7/7,
okay,
which is the day of the bombings in London.
Oh yes.
So there was really bad terrorist attacks in London. Well, the bombings went off on buses and tubes and what have you. And I was operated on that day. So I had the testis. They said to me, they said, "Right, Mr. Garrett, we're going to take your testicle out," which is obviously had the tumor, had part of the tumor in it. They can do the treatment before, but if it's really advanced, they tend to do it after all the stuff. Otherwise, the treatment takes a couple of weeks yeah. To do. And then obviously being my diagnosis, I wouldn't be here if I had the treatment before. So they did the treatment. They did that after. So they said, right, we have to give you an option. I said, okay, what's the option? And they said, well, you can either have a static one, like a dummy one.
Okay.
I said, well, like a ping pong ball. And they went, yeah, similar to that, but, you know, it's not, you know,
quite as impressive.
Or nothing at all. I mean, okay, can I change my mind if I don't have a plastic one or a ping pong ball or whatever? He said, it's not a ping pong ball. Okay, forget the ping pong ball. Right, if I don't have a plastic one or whatever it's bloody made of, can I change my mind? I went, no. I went, okay, how long have I got to think about it? About an hour. All right. If I don't have a dummy one, will I walk around in circles for the rest of my life? And they went, no. And I went, okay. So I got a plastic one. Otherwise, I'd just be doing the Bob Gray round because it was going round and round. And I went, yay.
And they're going to be one direction.
Yeah, exactly. It'll be like that. I just have such a bigger thigh on one side.
Yeah, it's always slightly tilted to one side.
Yeah, exactly. even before I start running, I'll do a Debbie at the end of the spine, be like that.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah.
I'm just like that normally because I've got the same quality, like that. Even the chafing on that, though, man, bloody hell. You'd be like, my body glide all the way through. But no, they said, I had the op on, so they basically replaced the testicle with a dummy one, and then they did another op, which...
Oh, I knew you were going to just...
Oi, oi, oi.
So if you're listening to this, can you describe that scar, Tom, that you've just showed?
You want to say it again?
Yes. So it's from the bottom of Tom's hip, and it is in a sort of backwards... it's an R, isn't it? And it goes right up above almost the bottom of his rib cage.
And then obviously there's one there...
It looks like Wolverine and you have had a fight.
Exactly. But no, it's a big shark, massive shark.
Oh, yeah, or a big shark. I'd go with Wolverine. I think that's slightly cooler.
I like that. Could do that, actually. Rather than a big shark, it makes me... Yeah, Wolverine actually makes me look a bit more... like that, with knives on it. But no, that was not a great time because when I was going through the treatment, it's almost like a conveyor belt, in and out as quick as possible. And the bad side of that is when I had the op, it was here. So they basically had tubes here,
oh my goodness.
Here, and then they had one in my my fitness to basically stop me leaving the bed. And they said, right, everything was done under anaesthetic. And the gentleman that did the treatment is unfortunately no longer here. He's upstairs and living the dream up there. But it's called the Tim Christmas Scar. And yeah, basically he did that. And then all the tubes were put in me while under anaesthetic and taken out of me. Mm. With no anaesthetic.
Oh. They
pulled them out and you could just feel like your part of your inside just going boop, 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 like that.
I had to have the same after my third child. I had my womb basically exploded. Long story, not as interesting as yours, but I had the same and I had the tube right across the inside of my stomach, and having it pulled out was worse than childbirth. It's just like someone's ripping out your insides basically.
Yeah, I mean, literally, they said, it was the day in hospital where I was, where I had to take Valium, where I was banging the bed, going like this, I can't do this, to throwing up in my wet room because I overdosed on Nesquik. That was the only time I was sick.
Again, yeah. Amazing ultra training this.
No, taking pineapple Nesquik, absolutely completely rank and wrong in so many ways. And then having that pulled out of me like that. I mean, I had to cough quite a few times and it was just absolutely rank. And then I had staples in me. So yeah, they were on top of me and underneath. So every time I went past airport security, they were like, excuse me.
Yeah.
Mate, I could run through him naked, mate, and I was still, you know, like that.
Yeah. I fought Wolverine, don't mess with me.
Yeah, exactly.
It just sounds relentless, Tom, honestly. Just one thing.
She's hiding the posters of Wolverine, aren't they? I think as soon as what's the one where he plays as soon as The Greatest Showman came out, she's like, no, I had him in my mind as Wolverine. Now he's singing like,
I don't mind what he is. Hugh can be anything.
Film will be delivered. It was The Greatest Showman.
Shut up, Gary. No,
I really enjoyed it. I went in there thinking nothing and came out thinking that was just probably the best 2 hours I remember spending for ages. I loved it. Absolutely loved it.
Gary.
But right. After I came out of the op, I was like I said, I was working in nightclubs in the West End, and the company I worked for went into administration. And so I lost my job, didn't get a lot of money from them. And then I started to do consultancy for a couple of bars, but the word kind of went around the industry that I was sick. So I couldn't get much work, because people were saying, unfortunately not today, you know, it's not, your CV is not that. And I never went for an interview from 1996. I had my first interview and then after that I never interviewed because I got poached or I got people came in and saying, we want you.
Yeah.
And then I started working for Ramsay, Gordon.
All right.
And then I...
Were you chefing for Gordon or what were you doing?
No, I was front of house, my dear. I was talking to the public. I was behind
one of his restaurants.
I was. It was a restaurant called Maze in Mayfair. So it was almost like fine dining tapas style. So small dishes, which was kind of a big thing back then. Not many people were doing it. It wasn't just starter, main course, dessert. It was almost like 4 to 5 dishes per person, and people ate at the bar, and they served by me. So,
nice.
Yeah, my girlfriend at the time thought, "Oh, that's a bit different for you." And I went, "Look, I've just come out of cancer.
Yeah,
I need to get money. I need to start, you know, looking at getting a mortgage and a family and blah 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 blah."
Yeah,
and then we had a flat in Poplar. And I, you know, went to see her, went to the flat after work one day and she was with someone else in the bed within about 6 months of me coming out. And that's worse than obviously part of the reason why the treatment is kind of like, oh my God, you know. But then that was worse than the treatment because you think that's your fault, what you've done, what this, what that. And then the cancer is like, I was accepted. I didn't have done anything wrong. But then I moved out. Yeah, I went into a very, 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 very bad place, very dark. And a lot of my friends kind of didn't want to know me anymore. Because they're not really friends. So,
Are you sort of industry, maybe you're working in as well?
Yeah, I mean, because I didn't go to university. I didn't do well at school. A lot of the sports clubs, as soon as you start working in hospitality, don't really want to know you because you can't commit to training sessions.
Yeah, okay.
You're always working weekends, and if you have a weekend off, they kind of go, oh, my God, I want a weekend off, because you literally, in the industry, if you have a Saturday night off, you're kind of going, might as well go and see someone in a bar then.
Yeah.
But then I moved in with my sister for a bit. I ended up getting my flat, just on the old Kent Road. And then there's a ledge that goes around the flat, which you're not really meant to get on.
But okay.
I opened the window, sat on the ledge, bottle of Jack Daniels, couple of packs of cigarette, and some naughty stuff. And then just got stoned and decided to, what's the point of just end my life? What's the point? Because I put so much into a relationship. I wasn't doing anything for me. It was all for her, all for us.
Yeah.
I didn't have anything going for me. I didn't have, so I just thought, what's the point? And then I eventually just started edging myself closer and closer and closer. And then I just thought, what are you doing? You know, just why are you ending it on that? I mean, you're here for a reason. Just don't try and make your life better. So I went to the bathroom, looked at myself, and went, you've got to sort your shit out. And then it was like the Jerry Maguire moment. You have a snap moment of something that just comes into you and goes, some comment sits on your shoulder and goes, hang on a second. And so from then on, I started to kind of go.
Angel was flapping its wings above you.
Yeah, literally. It was all by myself because I didn't have anyone to kind of go to because, you know, there's only so many times you can talk to your family about it when they just go, oh, you know, like that, you know. And I didn't have any close mates that I could open up to like that. So I kind of started to do. What made me happy? So it was sports. So I started to run. I started to do like short runs, like a couple of miles, 5Ks, 10Ks, built it up to half marathons. And then I was doing triathlons, duathlons. And then I, on a triathlon show, there was, which is really good actually to bring someone in from a completely different sport. There was an ultra runner called Mimi Anderson doing a sport. At the triathlon show called TCR, triathlon show in Sandown, and she was doing a talk about ultra running. I thought, that sounds a bit mental.
This sounds nuts. You need to be mental. He's got my name all over it.
Yeah. And then she mentioned she's got clients, and I went, oh, let's go and try and have a chat. You know, so, hey, Mimi, how are you doing? Oh, hello. She's very well spoken, isn't she? She went, and then she went, I'm God, that's marvellous, excellent. You should do something. So I got a coach. I got Mimi to coach me from 2012, and I saw she did lots of running. I saw she was good at doubles, running there and back, and she had a Guinness World Record for running Ireland. I thought, God, that sounds amazing. Can you imagine getting a Guinness World Record for Ireland? That'd be so good, running the whole length. So that kind of embedded into my head to do that. And then I did my first marathon in 2012 when I got Mimi as a coach. And then I started
to do a road marathon or a trail marathon
in London in a morph suit.
Oh,
I've never
nothing to hide there. Oh.
What's a morph suit? Is it the guy on Heart Attack?
No, it's like a full, it's a body skin basically.
No, this was my first, that was a picture. I don't know if you can see it. That was a picture of my first duathlon.
Okay, yes, yeah.
In Hyde Park.
Yeah.
And then I did my first marathon in, where was it? I don't think I've got it here on my phone. I did my first marathon in 2012, which is in a morph suit. Imagine like you're covered from head to foot in this, it's almost like a Spider-Man outfit, but just.
Are you doing kind of Power Rangers though?
Yes, exactly. You've got it. You had to get away from Wolverine for a bit, but I give you kudos for that. Well
Power
done.
Ranger, Wolverine.
It's good.
Spider-Man.
What a combination.
But no, I did that. And it was where I just danced with everyone. And I did it in 4:17. And then I saw a 100-mile event called the Grim Reaper in the middle of England. And it was 40, 70, 100 miles in 28 hours. And I thought, well, you could do 40 in 28 for definite. Yeah. 70, yeah, you could do that. 100, I don't know, but I'll give it a shot. And it was a 10-mile loop 10 times. And I thought, that's a good introduction to ultras. Because if you do point to point, you kind of, you don't know, you know, what's going to go on.
Yeah.
If you go around the same nutrition the whole time, every 10 miles, you can kind of get into a system and you kind of think, okay, that's a good introduction. And then just get what you need, have a safe kind of idea and then go.
Yeah.
Whereas point to point for me at that point was a bit of a risk. So I thought, so I dropped at 90 because I had a bad foot injury. I sorted myself up with people at Profeet with new insoles. Following year, I came third. And I thought, well, if you want to do Ireland and you want to do those kind of things, try, there's a half marathon on Sunday. So it was from Friday to Saturday, this race. It finished in the afternoon. I thought, I came third in 22 hours, I think, okay. 100 miles. And then I was quite happy with that. And then I did the half marathon on Sunday. So I just do the half marathon. I did the half marathon organized by the same people. And I did it in just under two.
Wow. Well, that's not too shabby for a half marathon after.
I thought that was all right. And then I started to look at Centurion running. So I did Thames Path, Grand Slam. I did the Thames Path, and then the South Downs Way, and then the North Downs Way, then the Winter 100, I think it was back then. And then did that. And then following year, I did, I think, the Thames Path. Then a couple of weeks later, I did the Grand Union Canal or the GUCR. Seriously, does that mean? I mean, people are so busy they have to adapt like GUCR. I've got so little time on my hands. I have to say GUCR.
Yeah.
Weird now. But yeah, I did that, and then I dropped to 85 because I had an injury in my shin. I thought, oh, that's going to be tricky. So I came back the next year. I did that again, but then I discovered the T184 race, which was a race organised by Shane Benzie, gait analysis coach, and it was from the Barriers of the Source, where you have to carry all your food with you for the entire duration. You can't go into any shops, and you get only water, and you can't have any crew, no nothing. And I thought, that's really good. I like that. Because none of the races I ever had crew, it was all me the whole time.
Funny, like, that surprises me about you, that you wouldn't want like a bit of a cheerleading squad.
No, because I've been, you know, because it puts more pressure on me.
Okay.
To make sure they're okay.
Okay. Yeah, you spin it like that. Yeah.
I'm more like, are you okay? Can I, you know, I've seen some people where they sit down at aid stations and they're just sitting there and it's like the crew member comes up and goes, would you like to see the menu, sir, on the menu? Cheer charge bars. We have bananas. We have nuts. We have Kiora. We have what kind of Kiora is it? What flavour is it? And some of the races are so aggressive. And I went, are you having a Barney, mate? Are you having a Barney? What is it? You know. And so I literally just went along my way doing it. And then there's less pressure on you because all you worry about is just putting one foot in front of the other. You don't have to worry about everyone else. I'm quite a selfless person. I kind of care sometimes. Well, not sometimes, a lot more about other people than myself. And that's had detrimental effects on my life, which I'm still kind of working on today, as it were. So I like being quite isolated in running races. And so I did the T184, sort of the back. So I came second in that. And I think I slept for 5 minutes on the first evening, and then a couple of minutes later, I slept for another 5 minutes, and then that was all I slept for the entire 184 miles.
How long does that take?
55 hours.
Okay. And is the terrain like going quite different? Because presumably, if you're going from the barriers to the
sort. From the barrier, and you go from the Thames Barrier all the way to Greenwich, across Greenwich, and then you stay on the north side all the way to Teddington Lock, and then you cross the lock. And then you follow the Thames Path, because until Teddington Lock, there's two Thames Paths. And what Shane worked out is that if you cross at Greenwich, it's actually, I think, 4 or 5 miles longer on the north side to on the south side. So he didn't really want anyone taking over the other race and doing it like that, which I thought it was such a good race, because it's almost like you discover more about yourself. If you do a safe race all the time, thinking, well, I've got people there, I've got that race, it's all good, but then it's like saying, I've got to go out of my comfort zone a little bit, because that's where the magic happens. I could be really good at this. And then you believe more in yourself, where you kind of haven't got a safety net of people there with you all the time. because you've got your own cheering squad inside you, and you kind of go, right, so I've got one foot, one foot, one foot, one foot. I've got my food, I've got this, I've got one foot. Because throughout a lot of my life before I went through cancer, I was my own cheering squad for a lot of it. I was my own motivation. When I came out of chemo, being OTG'd on and getting myself back, I was once again my own cheering squad. So yeah. I didn't have anyone to rely on, to go to kind of depend on. I get people have crew, and I think that's awesome, and I don't think that's bad in any way at all. I think if whatever gets you to the finish line, you do whatever you see fit to do. And if you need people helping you to do it, or supporting you more in that respect, yeah. I think that's great, because it makes them, it brings them a sense of motivation that they see someone, oh my God, look at that, Carrie's done this, or Evina's done this, or someone so has done this. That motivates them, and then they tell someone else, and then they tell someone else, and it makes the whole world fitter and healthier.
Yeah.
So there are, you know, there's good things about either, I think.
Are you quite good at looking after yourself?
Again?
Are you quite good at looking after yourself in these long, with being self-supported? Do you preempt problems? Are you good at problem solving? Or is it something that you've had to work quite hard at?
Yeah, because sometimes it's your crew and your support structure do nudge you along to eat or do that bit of maintenance. Yeah.
No one knows yourself better than your actual self, but then you always, I think some people find it scary to kind of think about themselves or talk about themselves.
Some people find it really hard because they don't in their everyday life to really go to actually face themselves. Like something I've been working with a few clients is like when you're out running and you're running hard, or if you just turn your music off, turn your podcast off and listen and be with yourself, because that's a huge part of ultra running is spending the time in your brain. And I think loads of people don't practice like long runs. They're like, oh, it's okay, I can listen to like podcast. You should listen to our podcast all the time, but do it while you're folding laundry. But a huge part of ultra mental is being with yourself and coping with the demons. That's why I was kind of like you're obviously really good at being with yourself in your brain and and being content. And it's something I've learned the last few years is like that ultra mindset of just being content, and you don't need a lot of dialogue in your brain.
Yeah. Well, I mean, just,
that says a lot about me.
I know. I think a lot of people are with all due respect, scared to realize the fact that, you know, to admit stuff. I mean, there's still this whole thing about, you know, you go online, you go on Facebook, you go on Instagram. Facebook is different. Instagram is different to Facebook, and TikTok is different from, you know, a lot of other things. Facebook is more friends, people that you've known for a long time, school friends, work friends, people like that. But TikTok and Instagram is different because you can put hashtag out and connect with so many people, you know, that you don't even know.
Yeah.
But if you put something on like emotional, you know, on Facebook, you may get people that generally don't know what to say.
Yeah.
They don't know how to talk about it. They don't know, you know, somebody puts, I'm not going through a good time. People go, I don't know how to react. Do I message them? Do I speak to them? Do I ask them how they are? Because, you know, if they say, I hope you're okay, if there's anything I could do, help. But then they may say, oh my God, they may call me. They may ask me all these questions. But, you know, there's some people that may message them and go, if there's anything I can do, just help. Just call my number. But I think there's two ways. People are scared to admit sometimes that there's something going on. It's like, you made a really valid point, like turn your music off. I never, ever, ever run with music or anything. I run when I was training for double long last night or any race, I literally just ran. I didn't have any music, didn't have anything, I didn't listen to anything. Because in the first couple of miles, you think about, right, okay, I've got to do this, I've got to write this program, I've got to do this, I've got to do the shopping, I've got to do the ironing, I've got to do laundry, I've got to do whatever it is. And then you eventually just go blank. And it's the most beautiful place to be in the world, where you just go, look at that cloud, or look at that bird, or listen to that, or just hear your feet on the trail or splashing around. And it's such a beautiful place. But I think when I say to people, I'm a running coach, I work holistically, so I work with your mind and body together. Some people are a little bit, ooh, You didn't just work on the body. You don't just work on the, you know, I work on the mindset and the visualization, try and visualize the finish line to get you there. And yeah, but I want to run 5K, and I need to work on your mind and get you understanding that it's a process rather than just getting you to the finish line, or, you know, but people want to get there so quick now. And when you chat about the mental health, people are, it's a kind of an area where people find it hard to talk about. Still find, even in lockdown where people have been stuck inside for so long, you know, they still struggle with talking about it. But I never listen to music at all. I kind of quite like it when you know, you don't think about stuff.
It's lovely. It's probably one of the only times of the day. I do listen to podcasts and music when I'm just generally commuting, but yeah, quite often it's the only time of the day where there's no thoughts. And sometimes I get home and it's like, I don't actually know what I thought about for that 40 minutes. It's wonderful. It's no distractions.
You have to fill your life with stuff. I mean, I'm doing all these things on TikTok now where just doing all these like 30-second or minute videos where it's just almost like, you know, just, have you ever, there's a bench. You ever sat on a bench and just looked around and done nothing? Literally just sat on the bench and just stop. Take a minute. And get outside as much as you can. I know it's hard when, I mean, my partner works in Public Health England. She's in a meeting now and she's got back-to-back meetings pretty much from 8:30 all the way through till 5 o'clock. So it's very, very hard. But don't ever feel that because you haven't left the house from 8:30 till 5:30, that's the day. I know it's hard, especially in the winter when it's like dark at 7 and dark at 4 and you go off a... I need to move to a hotter country or where there's more sun. But you can get out whenever you want. As long as you're safe and you're in an environment where, you know, even if it's with someone and you're safe, you know, and, you know, away from people, then go for a walk. Just get out or sit in your garden or go for a walk up and down the road. As long as you get that sense of outside and breathe and listen to different noises apart from being cooped up. But I think people are sometimes really scared to be with their thoughts. I mean, most ultra runners or runners in general or people that go to the gym have got demons. And a lot of those demons haven't been dealt with in the past. So I was saying, I was at an event last night and he was saying, well, how do you work with people psychologically? And I went, well, okay, you've got two people and they're both, and they were both went through a really traumatic childhood. They're both abused, both bullied, and they both want to get fit. But this trainer gets them physically fit, works on their body, you know, tries to get them really big and bulky and, you know, like...
Wolverine.
Like Wolverine, exactly. Exactly, like Wolverine, like that. And then the other person tries to understand, you know, their past, tries to get them fit mentally and physically too, so they deal with the demons.
Yeah.
So if they both have a situation when they're out drinking and then they get people shout with them and abuse them because they're big, that person that's been trained physically is going to probably go mental at them because he's going to delve back into the past and say, oh my God, you know, I was bullied, you're the same, and just have a go and just come at them. Where the other person, because of the psychology process he's been through with the trainer, he's learned to kind of put that to one side and say, look, well, you know, they're the weaker ones, just walk away. And I think that's that when you work on the mind and body together, I think that's the important thing. You know, and ultra running, a lot of most people in running or in sport in general, I think definitely for ultra runners, they've got stories.
It is very common.
To attract, all you have to do is read the cyclist's autobiography. Any Tour de France winner, and there's normally a father figure in the background that has caused some sort of emotional damage. And
yeah, it's always past. It's always
a past. It gives people incredible drive and it enables them to have an incredible focus and push themselves. But as you're saying there's a dark corner of the mind that also needs to be looked at.
Well, it's good. It's good to work on the mind and the body, because I worry sometimes, you know, if you can't exercise, if all you've ever done is work on the physical, and then for some reason exercise, the ability to exercise is taken away from you, then where do you go from there if you've never...
You look at injury. If you take that as an example where we're kind of like, a lot of runners are obsessed with exercise. They have to get out. Like you mentioned, there's no... It's not a run if it's less than 10 miles. I've got to do that. But there's a reason why somebody's saying, got to do 10 miles, because maybe something in the past was saying, if you don't achieve that, you're not good enough.
Yeah.
You know, it could be something to do with the past. Like if you don't achieve this standard, that's not what you took, that's not that. And you take it on with you for life.
Yeah.
But then, yeah, you just, I think any distance you do, as long as it's achievable and it makes you feel good inside, I think that's the best thing about it. Because, and going back to the running side, going back to, you know, the I've got to do this, I've got to do that. Do you enjoy running? Okay, don't get too hooked on races. Don't get too hooked on training. You enjoy it. If it becomes too much, I've got to do this, I've got to do that, I've got to do it. It's almost like a schedule would work and you forget the reason why you're running in the first place. And I think it's all about, it should be mostly to do with enjoyment and, you know, enjoying yourself and making you a better person.
Maybe definitely as myself when I'm getting older, you know, initially you find running maybe for health and then you think, oh yeah, I really love this. And then you start chasing times and then you think, oh my goodness, what's happening with my running now? It's bringing some anxiety into my life. Yeah, and then
that's the beauty thing about ultra marathons. I was never really into marathons that much. I did one in 2012. But the fact about ultra marathons, and I realized this when I started doing it, people are like, oh, I did an ultra marathon. People are like, oh, wow, cool. Where were you doing that? You know, did you finish? I mean, yeah, I finished. It was really good. Well, where was that? As soon as you talk about marathons, you say, what time did you get? It's so, I'm not saying every single person does this, but it's a lot to do with, if you chat about people that have just started running, they say, I did a 5K. Oh, did you finish it? But then there's a big jump from 10K, half marathon, marathon. When you talk about 10K, marathon, half marathon, then people are kind of more time-oriented. Yeah. Whereas 5K, when you start running, they're like, did you finish it? Oh, well done you. Congratulations.
Yeah.
Ultra marathon, did you finish it? It's like Sarah Morwood, many years ago, she did, I think it was the South Downs Way 50, and she got first lady, third overall, which is, I was like, what the, that's amazing. And she was a lovely person, Sarah. And she waited at the finish and gave her trophy to the back marker. To me, that was almost like the epitome of like what really ultra running stood for.
Yeah.
People at the front go so fast, but then could they run for 13 hours in 50 miles? Or could they run for 32 hours?
Yeah.
If they've run the same distance, but could they run in time? You know, but then there's almost mutual respect for people at the people that are chasing the back, for people at the front. So I love that. And that was really good sense of what ultra running was. And that's why I kind of fell in love with it, really, I think. I thought it was so different and not time obsessed. It was more trust the process and enjoy the journey rather than the outcome.
And it's always going to be such a journey. Yeah. Talking about journeys, can you tell us a little bit about your long las? I said that right. Challenge.
I did a race in 2019 called Long Las Cymru, which is from Holyhead. So if anyone's been to Ireland on the ferry, that's where you get the ferry from. So it's Holyhead Port all the way down the cycle route 8 to Cardiff. And it's pretty much on road a lot of the way. And obviously I did Ireland in 2017, where that was all on road. And that was 25 minutes sleep when I did that for the whole length.
That on the sleep deprivation?
I was meaning it was like, my God, you could have got such a better time if you hadn't, if you slept more, Thomas. God damn it. You know, she's going to slam me. So I do not talk like that. Hello. Could have got such a better time if you had slept. I was trying to do it non-stop.
Felt like sleeping was cheating.
Yeah. I mean, it was almost like I was a bit, the leprechauns and what were coming out of the bushes at the end were a bit cuckoo because I was literally weaving in and out of the road.
Oh, wow.
I quite liked, that was the only time I was ever crewed, by the way, just to digress from long last. It was the only time I was ever crewed. So you mentioned about crew earlier on, you know, and saying, you know, you seem to have a strong mind. But when I was being crewed for Ireland, because it was for Guinness World Record attempts, and it was only to get attention onto the Busting Your Balls Awareness website for testicle cancer. Yeah. It wasn't to get a world record. It wasn't to kind of say, look at me, I'm doing this. It was all to get attention onto the cause of raising awareness. Because if you throw money at a charity, it's great, it raises awareness, but I wanted to get early detection onto it, catch it early, kill it early, done. And then we sent about 500 posters throughout the whole of Ireland on the route. So we sent to all the pubs. People had it in their cars, awesome. You know, honked me along the route. And then that was awesome, but I'd never had crew before. So I got people on a bike following me saying, hi, can I get some coconut water, please? Oh, thank you very much. Very kind of you. Thank you very much. Thanks.
It's too cold. He wanted it frothy with a straw. He said a straw, Denise, a straw. Oh, my God.
No, I was literally like, have some water, please. Thank you very much. Thank you. It's very kind of you. How are you doing? All right. Are you okay, Mark? And so I was with Mark Denby, who's a good ultra runner, Kevin Mayo, and a couple of other people. And I had, you know, Kevin Mayo's son was following me with drones, and it was all videoed. So that was really good. So I did that with it 85 hours, I think, just over 85 hours. And I did it with 25 minutes sleep. So I think it was 5 minutes, 5 minutes. And then a 15 minute, and that was it.
Yeah.
For the whole thing. So that was, I was pretty pleased with that. And then, yeah, I took a year out to get qualified as a coach, left my job. And then in 19, I did the Canal Slam. And then I think I did Grand Union Canal in 41, Kennet and Avon in 37. And then I did 34 for the Liverpool Leeds,
yeah.
And then I did Longlass, and I thought, oh my God, Mark Cobain, sorry. I thought, I like that. It's completely south to north.
Yeah.
Well, north to south, you only get water, and you get a drop bag. You get water every 25, drop bag every 50, and then there's indoor checkpoints.
Can you go into shops and stuff on the way, or is it pretty much...
The rules are that you go from point A to point B along this route. You can divert a little bit, but you get water every 25 miles and literally only water. There's literally Karen Webber, who's the most dry, she's drier than Gandhi's flip-flops, literally. She literally would just go, you're right, Tom, how you doing? Some water there for you. Come on. You know, like that. And then the Lindley Chambers in his van kind of going, it's nice and warm in here, Tom. Do you want to come in here? You know, like that. And then, and so that was water every 25, drop bag every 50, and then indoor checkpoints every, I think, 100, 150, 200, and then 250. And then that was it. And then, but you can get... the difference is between that and the T184 is you can go into shops.
Okay.
And you can go, so I went proper nerdy on doing the logistics of it. And I did something similar to I went proper like where was it? If I can show you. Let me have a look. I basically did an Excel spreadsheet, if you like.
Oh, I love a spreadsheet.
So that was my spreadsheet.
Yes, colours. I like it too. Brilliant.
I can't see it. I had location, shops, hill notes, miles to the next checkpoint. I had three plans, A, B, and C plan.
So when you say hill notes, does that mean you know there's you're going up or down a hill? Or was that?
It was just in case my mind wasn't seeing myself going up a hill. I read my notes and I said, you're going up a hill. Oh, cool. Just to... You know, yeah, exactly. Just a bit of a clarification when you're kind of like not sleeping. But yeah, I had an A, B, and C plan. So it was like, A was, I think, to do it in like 80 hours, or C plan was to do it in 89 hours or whatever.
Okay.
So I had to go onto two different websites. One was a pacing website where you put your time in, which was 88 hours, and then you put 2:53 and it gives you an average pace. And then you look at all the locations along the route, saying I've got 7 miles to the location. So you put your average pace in, you put 7 miles, then it's the time. And then you go onto a website called timeanddate.com,
yeah,
where you put in the time and it tells you, it asks you when you start and the time, and then it tells you what time you're going to get to that location. So it's I love it. Yeah, all the locations. So, but then I had to look on the websites and go on Google Earth and drop the little person into the shop, into the place, and think, right,
yeah,
when do the shops open? When do they close? What kind of food do they sell? Because I'm vegan. So, yeah, and they look at you literally and they go, "You're what? You're bloody vegan.
Why
the bloody hell is that?
Why would you do that? Come in and have a pasty."
I don't know. Seriously. You know, so I basically went down the whole route and I did it in 83, 86. But I think I slept for, I was sleeping. I was getting really pissed at myself because I slept for too long. And then as soon as I entered the ring in the Cardiff Bay, I said to Mark, I said, can I double it next year? And he went, "Yeah, go on then, do it now." I went, no, I'm not prepared yet. Because I had really bad blisters in my feet. I had really bad blood blisters in my feet. And I'll try and find a picture. And they were, yeah, I couldn't really walk on it. I was in bits. And then I said, "Can I do the double?" And they said, "Yeah, you can do it." So you have to get permission from the race director, in my opinion, to obviously respect the race. So I started training really hard for the double from Holyhead to Cardiff. And then I was thinking, right, you could run back. And unfortunately, in 2020, we lost Mark Thornbury for liver cancer. And I'd obviously gone through cancer as well. And I feel very, very lucky to be here and fortunate. Yeah. So that's why I spent all the time raising awareness, raising money, raising funds. And I thought, do it for King College, which is a hospital where he was treated, and he raised hundreds of thousands of pounds for them. And I said, right, wouldn't it be really good to double it, but to do it a race going there and to do it unsupported on the way back? And unsupported meaning like no crew,
yeah,
no support, you're on your own for the entire duration of the whole country. Because, and people say, well, why would you do that? Why wouldn't you want crew? And I went, well, you look at an illness, you're supported by friends, family, people, not doctors, nurses.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, you're very isolated, you're on your own, no one understands what you're going through. You're literally, no one can relate to it. So that's the reason I wanted to do one way, one the other.
Yeah.
So to almost, you know, kind of relate that to an illness. So I did the route, but I had a chest infection. 1 week before the race, I had a chest infection where I had to take, not amoxicillin, it was one pill every day. And I was taking this on the day of the race. I took it on the second day of the race. I was mentally starting to visualize running the whole race for quite a while.
Yeah.
But during the first day and second day, I was literally standing like this, going like this. Oh, I can't breathe. Because obviously when you stand up, your airway's open, but when you bend down, your airway's a little bit more open. So I was literally just going, okay, calm down, don't get anxiety, you've got to be okay, just believe and trust the process, you're going to be okay. And I think I was quite way back in the field and running with people that I'd never really run with before, because I've never been a runner that I know how fit I am and gone straight to the front, because I like overtaking rather than to be overtaken. So I've always had a little bit of that in my head, in my mind. I've never had the balls to go straight to the front in a race and kind of try and win it straight from the go, which I could have done on this one if I'd not been at a chest infection. But I've always got a bit of people saying, you know, in the back of my head saying, you're not going to win it. So there's always a bit of doubt in that respect.
Yeah.
But I was always, you know, I started doing, the chest infection started to clear a little bit around 160.
Only an ultra runner could say that.
started to clear around 160 miles. And I was always quite happy and chirpy as a runner, and always trying to laugh and joke with people. So every time I saw somebody on trail, I was like, "You all right, mate? How's it going? You all right? Yeah, I'm all right. Come on, run with me. Let's do it. We can just put your head up. Don't look at the ground. Try and be positive throughout the whole. Look ahead. But then I was kind of getting into my stride eventually, and I saw it was getting dark in the evening, about 165, 170 miles. And I saw two people ahead of me, and then I ran past them and said, "Good evening, chaps. How you doing?" I ran past them, went round a corner in this country road near Brecon, about 10 miles away from Brecon, and saw two other people, turned my head torch off. And it was kind of like early evening, so it was a little bit light in a way. But then I I went around the hedge, hiding from them because they were ahead of me, and I basically went like this. Like really loud, and I hid, and they went. They just turned around and went.
Yeah. And were there any cows about? You know, I know you made the cow noise, but were the fields full of cows or just
I've had cows chasing me all the time. Every time I go into
class,
when I'm around with cows, I go, "You know, Mr. Cow, can you see cow?" And they chase me, and then I got my wind. I got rid of the chest infection. I started running, I started flying because I was literally bits from like the first 50, 25 mile. And then I started flying at around 160, 170. And I started flying. I went from like, I think 13th place. And then I got to Cardiff. I think I was in third place.
Wow.
Two people ahead of me, 25 miles to go at Merthyr Tydfil. And then they were about 7 hours. No, they were quite a few hours ahead of me. They were 7 hours ahead of me at Merthyr.
Yeah.
And when I finished, they finished at 11:30. I finished at 2:30. So I think I made up 4 hours in
25 miles. That is some going. That is amazing.
It's almost like a marathon time,
isn't it? Yeah.
But I got very lost in the latter part. I mean, but then when I did the reverse, I looked at myself, when you fucking dick. It was one and a half fucking time.
Well, what is the nav like? Yeah, I was really interested in that. Is it hard to follow this trail?
Well, it kind of, even the people live in Wales, go, yeah, I've done the Taff Trail, and it sometimes goes, I'm not going to tell you where the fuck I am. I'm just there. Oh, no, I'm here. Hello. You know, like that. On the way back, it's easy. On the way there, when I did it in 19, navigation was... I think I was good with navigation. I was okay with it. But because I'd slept quite a lot.
Yeah.
In the long last on when I first did it in 19, I slept for quite a few hours, like 4 hours, 5 hours in the whole race, where I was so embarrassed and so pissed at myself for doing it. But then on this one, I didn't sleep until I didn't sleep until 150. And then I slept for 40 minutes. Inside, and then the couple of 5 minutes outside, and that was it. Because if you go into a checkpoint and it's really warm and cozy and toasty, because they like the heating on a lot.
Yeah, yeah.
And then when you go outside, you end up shivering a lot because you get that clammy skin. Because you don't. I mean, the best thing I find in ultras, if you wash your hands, you just go, oh, so I've got nice clean hands, you know.
Pretty teeth.
A bit of teeth and hand maintenance.
Yeah, brushing my teeth, washing my hands, just the basics. And then I just, I think I did 79:34 in that race, which was four hours quicker than the previous year.
Wow, okay.
But then again, I was not pissed off. I was devastated that I didn't win it. And I didn't do it in 75 because I really wanted to win the race because it's so much time away from your work, so much time away from your partner, so much time away from family and other things. And when you don't reach what you want to reach, you're gutted. I think my girlfriend was still on the train to Cardiff because she didn't realise I'd do it that quick. And so I met her at a hotel, which she got this nice hotel called St. David's on Cardiff Bay. We stayed there overnight, had a bottle of champagne, had something to eat because I could spend time with her, because otherwise it's all about the race. So I wanted to make sure I spent quality time with her. And then the next day I woke up and then started running back to Holyhead at 10 o'clock the next morning.
Wow.
But completely self-supported with no crew. And then I think I slept for about half an hour each night.
Did you sleep rough? Did you sleep out?
Yeah, I mean, the rule of the race before was, it was exactly the same rule. So there was no, you can't sleep in anyone's cars, can't sleep in anyone's B&Bs. It was literally looking for, I mean, it was the weather on the way down was nice. It was humid. I mean, it was too humid. It was like 94% humidity. And then, which a lot of people don't really look at when they go running. They just think, oh, it's nice and sunny, or it's cold. But then the humidity plays a big difference in sweat.
Yes.
And then on the way back, it was really bad weather. Yeah, it was pretty shocking. It was like the first time we did Long Last. It was torrential rain, 40 mile an hour winds, completely isolated in the middle of nowhere. So even if you looked at people's recycling bin, you saw, well, that's a nice bit of cardboard. It was literally, it was soggy. So I literally had a lighter in my bag. I found some paper and I made a mini fire. I had some bits of wood, you know, I was shivering. My hands were puffy. They had purple here. You know, it wasn't great. Yeah, I was looking at trains going, train. And my girlfriend was like, why are you talking like that, you weirdo? Why are you talking like that? Why are you taking the piss? Because I cry wolf quite a lot, and people think if I'm sarcastic, I'm not being serious. And she was
I am being serious.
You actually are cold. Hello, yes, I'm bloody cold. but she was updating.
Did anybody stop you? And I was like, "You're right, mate. You're right, you're right, babe. What's up?"
And I was going, "Yeah, I'm meant to be meant to be in my home." But no, I mean, there was a couple of people, because I had all these cards with a QR code that people could scan, and it went to the website to donate.
What talk? Scan it.
It's for my charity. What, for your charity? No, just like that. But there was a lot of people that were really good, really happy and really chirpy. But they said... I ended up getting a lot of messages afterwards because I only had a Nokia phone. I didn't have my iPhone with me. I had a cheap Nokia phone because I never run with my phone. Apart from, obviously, when I do my training, I have my phone on divert, so there's no buzzing or anything like that, no distraction. Yeah. When I race, I run with a Nokia phone. If there's any emergencies, I've got certain numbers in it, like Race Director, my partner, and obviously 999, what have you. But, I just was phoning her every so often so she could update social media. And then, I finished, and it was I just let everything out, and it was pretty emotional when you finish the race. But then after the race, I had quite a tough shin pain. So when you put, I run with like X socks, and they're quite supportive, but you could literally, when you took them off, you could literally see the whole of the sock on your leg.
Oh, wow.
So I was injured for I think November, December, and we went away to Tenerife to do some like nomadic coaching, because I'm a coach as well online. And my mum said, just make sure you elevate your leg. And I went, well, we're going at 33,000 feet, so I think that should be pretty good.
Yeah.
So I was literally like on the plane just doing that like that for a lot of it.
You're not the shortest of people, Tom, are you? That's 6 foot or something, 6 foot two, 6 foot three. So.
Yeah, 6 foot. And then you basically, then we got COVID for a few weeks, and then we got a really bad flu. And then we had a continuous cough. And then, unfortunately, this is the first time I've made it public. I've had to pull from a race, which I'm pissed about. Mark Cobain was meant to be, well, he's organising the Three Peaks.
Yes, that's correct.
I was so looking forward to this. I've never pulled from a race. And it was from Fort William to Ben Nevis, up and down Ben Nevis, run to Scarfell Pike, up, down, run to Snowdon, up, down, and finish. And I was so looking forward to it. But then there were all these signs, and we've got a big year personally this year for me and my partner. So the business needs to really happen as well. So there's a lot of things going on. And just because I was sick as well, I just don't want to be. When I messaged Mark a couple of weeks ago, he said, I had you down as a finisher. And I went, oh, don't say that.
Got to be right, Tom. Everything's got to, you know. Yeah. I don't think these things. These things are going to be tough, but it does have to be right.
And your story has so many of these junctions you've reached in so many different ways in your story. Yeah. And I'm absolute. This is just you know, and it will definitely make you a better, you're listening to your body, you're being kind to yourself, and it will make you a better runner and a better coach as well, that you're going through this all life lessons. And it seems that every time you've had a massive life lesson, you've come out wiser, stronger. I'd like to say funnier, but I don't know what I'm trying to
hear
that. But
the beauty part of it was it was really hard to come to terms with. My partner was like, just, you know, we've got to focus on us this year, because obviously when you do ultras, it's a lot. I mean, it's a lot of time away from family. Yeah. Unless you run early in the morning and you have it's the balance, the whole beautiful word balance, which is. A lot of people still struggle with, even the mentals, they struggle with it. But trying to find the time for each other, trying to find the energy.
Yeah. It's not just the time.
Yeah, I mean, then are you doing it morally? Are you doing it for yourself? Or are you doing it to raise money? But then you've got to think, if you're sharing a life with someone, you've got to think, right, just take that year out, really focus on your life, on your relationship, on your business, and then push everything into it. And then I kind of said, right, I'm going to pull out. And I felt sick when I did it. But then I thought, I train really well in these races to enjoy the race and to be well in it. I'm not just there to make the numbers up. I wanted to win it. And I think I could have won it and done really well in it. But I didn't want to. People said, yeah, but you can still do it. Reese Jenkins, who does Pegasus, just said, just do it. I went, but I just don't want to do it and look at the countryside and be in pain. I just want to enjoy it. I want to run well and enjoy it, you know, enjoy the scenery. So I contacted two of the crew that were with me in Ireland, Mark Denby and Kevin Mayo. I said, Mark Denby's a lovely guy. He's kind of like a different version of Harry Hill. He's like, hello, Tom, how are you? Okay? And I'm really good. He's such a beautiful person, such a nice guy, and he's very, very good runner. And I said, I've got a floating idea with you, Mark. He said, would you be interested in doing the Three Peaks, but completely self-supported? But we're just going from Fort William to Snowdon. We sort out a route as long as you're doing the Three Peaks. Because Mark said, as long as you do the Three Peaks, doesn't matter what route you go, as long as you do the Three Peaks, because the guide of a GPS. But you can, I mean, I've already found out that you could divert so many and save like 20, 30 miles on it, which is quite a few, like 5 or 6 hours in ultra terms. So we're gonna do it possibly next year or maybe early in the year after, and do it from Fort William up and down all the Three Peaks, but completely self-sufficient on our own. So we're not going to have any aid stations, no water. It's going to be harder than that race because there's going to be no bags. We're literally going to have to go into find what the villages are, what times they're open, the shops and supermarkets. So that's kind of a good thing to look forward to and to motivate you through the year, I think.
Would that be all be on foot, or would you say cycle between certain chunks of it?
Everything's ultras. Wow. Everything is ultra. There's no cycling at all. The hardest part will be when I looked at it, is the West Highland Way. It's not flat, but it's pretty rolling. Yeah. But it's not like mountainous. The only bits is the Ben Nevis and Scarfell and Snowdon. The rest of it is pretty runnable, really. But it's pretty sparse, the way you can get food within the West Highland Way. There's a couple of cafes, but knowing the countryside, they're going to go, well, no, we're just going to shut. And no. You know, we're not used to 24-hour, you know, news agents or off licenses in the countryside, where you just go out and you go, right, I'm in Pitlochry. Let's go out and dash.
Pitlochry's quite happening.
No, I remember doing a cycle race many years ago in Pitlochry, and I had a drink after the race, and I went out and I was a little bit tipsy. I thought, right, I'm just going to go back to the hostel, I think.
Yeah. When you get to Scarfell as well, there's not much going on around there for little treats after you've been up the summit. Yeah, I can't really think what you do after that. I wonder if there is if somebody's attempted it before, if there is a. This is Steve Birkinshaw for his Wainwrights. There was this optimal route. I wonder if that is already out there, that information. Have you checked out that?
No, I mean, I've checked out what the actual route in a race, so to speak.
Yeah, yeah.
No, I've never. I mean, I've been to Lake District many times, but the thing is with me, I do. I look for fucking loopy ones. I really do. But like I said, in the journey, I literally went from doing my first marathon in 2012 to 100 in the same year. And then I went to Grand Slam, 145, 184. I doubled the T184 the following year. And when I doubled the T184, I had the same thing on the way back. I couldn't get any, I didn't have any crew. I had to carry my food for the whole, I had 4 hours sleep from when I did the second 184. And I went, ran back with 4 hours sleep. But that was, you know, I just thought of how far can you push yourself too? Because I've seen people do 100-mile races and I think, fucking hell. Because when I did my first 100-miler, I think I was on par to do it in 18. And I thought, my feet are really on fire. They're really hurting. So I thought, well, let's put them in the River Thames. You fucking idiot. And literally, they were like proper track. I was literally going in the Thames like that. And then they were literally swelling at the end of it, and I was on my hands and knees. I was. I think I had I could taste sweet in my. I was hypoglycemic in my one of the first hundreds. So I was going. I need to get to the finish, and I was crawling for the last mile. I think that race to try and get to the finish, and everyone was running past me going, "You okay?" And I went. And it was so bad. And the air conditioning didn't work from bloody Oxford to London. I was like, what is this?
Oh, my.
Let's do it again next year. Come on, let's do it again. But no, I've always tried to see if there's any other way of doing a run. If there's any other, I mean, I thought of, should I try and do 100 in a faster time? But then, you know, I just thought this, you know, I just, the Three Peaks was just the ideal race to do.
It's got to excite you. I think it's got to excite you and scare you a bit.
Yeah. I mean, like I said, I would say to many people that I coach and I've had advice, when I give it to people over the bar, like the magic happens outside the comfort zone. If you don't do it, something that scares you, then you're kind of playing it safe.
Yeah.
Just try and do a race. If it doesn't work, it doesn't work. I mean, I did Caesar's Camp, I think, in the last time they did it, and I did, I think it was a 10-mile loop 10 times, which when I told Rina about my first year, she went, 10 times, 10-mile loop, that. I can't do that. But it was renowned to be one of the hardest races in the ultra running calendar at the time. And it was run by a guy who was a Dutch guy who was quite like, if you're gonna collapse on the race, can you just do it not on the path? Because people need to get, you know, do the run.
Yeah.
And right, who looks the gayest runner? Who's got tights on? Because I don't like tights. Who likes tights? And then I think there was 50 or 60 people that entered the race and I got eighth position on it. And there was a lot of people that represented GB and that dropped out. And I was still hanging in there kind of, and it was torrential rain. Like you couldn't, you know, it was so powerful. But I just thought, just enjoy it. And it was a big learning thing for me doing all that. I just thought, just as long as you're not injured, there's no reason to stop.
We hear this quite often, don't we, Eddie? People say, just embrace it. You know,
Eddie doesn't have a lot of time for it, does she? She's a rant about. Look, we've taken up almost your whole morning now, Tom.
If you've got questions, ask.
Thank you so much for sharing your journey still to go, where you are now. Everybody, if you're interested in learning more about Tom, you can find out his webpage and his coaching details in the Gary. Let's not pretend I do it, Gary. We'll pop them in the show notes. But we won't let you go quite yet, Tom, because we've got the... You thought you'd shared a lot with us now, but we've got the real nitty-gritty of the interview now. Prepare yourself for quick five questions. Pull your pants up. That's it. Tuck them in. Nice high waist. Good. Excellent. Perfect. Like sort of dungarees.
Well, we've got quite a few questions, Eddie, haven't we?
I know. So, let's have a quick.
After long last part, well, it's the not part one, but when you did the double, Did you, when you stayed the night in the hotel, do you remember what your meal was? You know, you spent some time with your partner and enjoyed that moment. Do you remember what you had to eat that night?
When I stayed in Holyhead, it was quite, I think I remember, yeah, roughly what we ate. It was almost like mashed potato, gravy, vegan sausages, spinach, vegan ice cream. There was a vegan pie. And then I was in the room on the floor. I can't do exactly what I was doing. I was literally on the floor like that with my feet up. And my partner was in the dancing on the bedroom going, "What's the meaning? What's the meaning of life?" And then I just had these visions because I had my feet up. I was completely knackered. And then she was feeding me grapes and then just dancing around the room saying,
"Wow."
And I was like, oh, I'm not with it. And there was no elevator. There was no elevator in the hotel.
Oh, my goodness me.
I bet that was one of the worst bits.
Yeah.
Often coming into civilization when you're in the midst of something like that is really hard because you almost don't want to be in civilization. Nobody understands and you get the rage and you're like, oh. That's me.
The rage.
She was staying there, I think, in the Premier Inn or the Holiday Inn or somewhere in Holyhead. But there was a hotel called Thera Bay, which is on the coast. So you've got Wales like that, and it's kind of on this side. So you've got Holyhead there, and it's kind of on the, so you can see Ireland from it. And it's a lovely place away from it. It's about 10 miles away, but we got given a lift by a couple of people that have supported, being in touch with my partner from the hotel. And she was chatting to them saying, "Oh, my partner's doing this." And they gave us a lift. But my feet were literally on fire because they were swollen, trench foot and stuff. But yeah, the meal was nice. But I was, you know, when you know when you're just going like that. And you're looking at people like that. I call it the bollocks face. And you go, like that. But we were walking around and people were going, "So where have you run today then?" "Oh, yeah, well, I ran from Cardiff." And, "Are the trains not working? Are the trains broken? I need to get back." And I went, "No, I know I ran. You know we can get a train." I went, "Yeah, but it's so boring." I mean, because I had an ethical reason to do it in the sense of fundraising for Kings and whatever, the word kind of spread around the restaurant. When I did the first bit, we got the meal for free from the hotel in Cardiff. We got champagne, we got on their Twitter feed or their Instagram feed.
Oh, brilliant.
When we did it in Holyhead, in the hotel, we got the meal taken care of. A lot of people gave us £10, £20 for the charity. So it was really good.
Oh, lovely. Really good. Anything you're watching on Netflix at the moment? Or Amazon or Disney?
I think we watched like King Richard the other day. We watched like House of Gucci. Yeah, we watched a couple of things. My girlfriend literally when she finishes later on, she was like, "Do you want to watch a film? And trying to get into the zone of trying to get up again, trying to get to bed at a good time. You know. And then she, because I have, you know, one of those things that you have in bed. You know,
oh, yeah.
That's very un-Wolverine.
Really love that. If I had it with me, you'll go, "Hello." Like that is literally one of the things you get in a pack where you get someone for Christmas. And it's like, it's almost like scented. I think it's still got stuff jingling in it. But they've run out of the smell. So I've just got that on me. Because I've lost the other one. But yeah, we sometimes watch a bit of films and stuff like that, but we don't watch box sets. But
you're on your, oh, well, this, I suppose, the Three Peaks, self-support or self-supported. You see a garage in the distance, the lights are still on. What is your dirty snack of choice from the service station?
I like the dirty snack.
Eddie's question there.
Mars bar, Snickers, Lion bar.
I mean, you can't really do anything dirty as a vegan. It's just so kind of like you're a vegan.
I suppose so, yeah.
Like you're an ultra runner, but a weird one.
Nut. You go to that dodgy fruit and nut bit in the garage. Eat natural bar.
Yeah, it's like, yeah, except nature. Yeah, it's not dirty at all.
Can you get like vegan ginsters?
Chocolate and peanut together, or pasty. Yeah, pasties.
In a Welsh garage, though, they'd be like, no, we don't have any of that. We don't know what that is, but no.
But the garages back in the day was the first original touchscreen technology. You know, when you went to the garage late at night and they didn't let you in, these garages, you were like, Pringles.
Yeah.
Red, not the green, the red ones. No, that's the green ones, the red ones. Cheese and onion and pasty. Now you've got mobile phones, you can literally show them a picture. No, not that one, the other one.
You just send the guy around the petrol station on these missions to get your bits.
I can't leave the shop. I mean, you see one guy walking around the shop, he's at that one, and this one just comes along. And they're going,
just let me in there.
That should be a Crystal Maze challenge.
The blue. No, that's the red. The blue. It's so funny. But it was like that in, I think, yeah. I think you kind of end up, when you do ultras, like long distance, even when you do like 100 miles, you end up, if you have like a cheer bar or any kind of bar you have, you kind of think, okay, I'm going to eat that. And on a normal day, you would eat that in like a second.
Yeah.
When you do ultras, you're like,
I can stay in the mouth for at least half an hour.
Yeah.
And then it's exhausting. You're like, and then sometimes you're like, I'm too tired to chew. I am too tired to chew, but I'm fine to run another 7 miles. That's fine, but I'm not chewing.
Yeah, exactly. It just takes a lot longer than what you would normally eat with. So, yeah, for sure.
Next question. Are you a driver or a passenger in a car?
Oh, in a car. I'm glad you mentioned the car bit because I was thinking you were going off.
Late night run to the hills.
No, I have a license, but I've never had a car. I've never owned a car.
Ah.
Rented it because we're in London, unless you use it for business. It just hemorrhages money. I went on Rightmove to find a property when I first looked at properties, and the cheapest, I went from the lowest to the highest, it's like the garage. When you mentioned earlier the question, that's the cheapest property in London. It was like £60,000 for a garage. And you think,
yeah.
And people rent it out. So I've used hire cars and I had to drive the RV to Oxford or to Ireland, I think, when we used it for Guinness World Record. But no, I've done both, but I've never owned a car.
Yeah, your bucket list race. Sorry.
Bucket list. Oh, blimey. Oh God! The Barclay one is an interesting one. The one in Tennessee, Laz, that's an interesting one. I think was it
Lindley? Have you applied for it before, Tom?
No, because I've never done a race outside of the UK. I've done lots of races inside, but I've never done out of the UK before, but it'd be interesting to think about it because there's a few things that I need to get on with other stuff in my life, like personally and professionally as well, and business, and find out where we're going and living and all that kind of stuff. And
yeah,
because when I do races, it's you try and get in the mindset, but I get very you know, like you saw the logistics of the Wales one. It's not just point to point with crew, where they're taking over it and you just run. But running's the easy bit. The whole logistics and organisation when you're completely unsupported is you've got to make sure you get it there. You've got to make sure there's food. But I think the Barclay one's a good one. There was one that Lindley did, which was I think was 600 and something miles. Mm-hmm. But there's a couple of things that I've, you know, sometimes you can just do your own race. I quite like the sound of doing John O'Groats Land's End, completely self-supported. I quite like running around. Like we go to Tenerife a couple of times in the last couple of years. I feel like running around that, you know, just, you know, it doesn't have to be necessarily a race, but it could be a race you put on, because there's always races that you haven't discovered, but running across America, possibly Sounds interesting to do that.
Awesome. Yeah.
But it's just the fact of that's a lot of pressure. It's not just money. It's the amount of, it's not, the running is the easy bit. It's like I said, it's the pressure that comes with it. And the amount of money that you spend on it, I guess. But yeah, there's a few. I've always thought of, should I get back into doing shorter races, but trying to get a really good time? But then it's a very different.
It's different. I want to see how far you'll go.
But it's different training, isn't it? It's like really fast twitch rather than slow twitch, and it's speed sessions.
When you say short, are you kind of thinking 5K, 10K, or marathon?
What I used to do, when I was doing triathlons, I did 5K and 17.3. That was my PB for 5K when I was doing them.
Too shabby, yeah.
But then I was doing 10K in like sub 40 when I was younger. But it's a very different, it's very different.
Yeah.
Different plyometrics, you know, elasticity of the muscles and how big the stride is. So when you're doing marathons, it's very much like economical and fluid movement. And, you know, you're kind of, if you run, say, for example, like Shane does, he's fascinating to go to and do. I could talk for hours on it. If you run a mile and you touch the floor, how many times in a 10K, or if you do an ultra, you've got to touch the floor more times in that mile when you do an ultra, because it's more bum, 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 rather than bum, bum, bum. You're still going fast, but it's over a short, longer period of time. So you're not putting as much pressure on your bones or in your muscles. But I don't know. I mean, I've just, you just think of just weird races. Like, I couldn't do Three Peaks. I'm devastated and gutted for that. So I thought, well, let's just try and do it completely self-supported with, on my own or with two other people. But then if you do it with two other people, what happens if one of you gets injured? Do the two of you carry on?
Yeah, oh, yeah. Well, you need to get that clear before you start up.
Turn you down?
I'm joking, I've got to go, mate.
Yeah, doing a race.
Yeah. I think when I did, I've only done it once as a pair. I think I mentioned I did the Bob Graham round once, and
definitely.
The only time that we said we'd leave each other if it meant that the other person's, because you have to do that in 24 hours, if the other person's Bob Graham was in jeopardy, that was our only, and we'd had this agreement. To get things in place before you set off.
I think if you run with people, like you have almost, if you run with people in a race or you meet someone in a race, I've always found that sort of hard, but you know, I mean, I remember doing Caesars Camp, and Gemma Carter, one of the first ultra runners I met, she was chatting with somebody behind me. I mean, literally, it was proper, like, natter. Thinking, I was there going like this, one of my first 100 miles again, and she was there going, so what are you saying? What are you saying? I'm knackered when I chat to people.
Yeah. What I do, right, I'll ask a question that I know will lead to a lot of response, and then just let them go, and my breathing.
Yeah, it's just ask a question.
So what's your story? What makes you do ultra running?
And relax. Just put a cardboard.
We wish you all the best for this year, however it looks, whatever path it takes. We are no doubt you will come out a stronger runner, and we will follow your progress. Hopefully you will come back on the podcast to tell us about that, the Three Peaks endeavor. Stay the same, stay cool.
Thank you.
And thanks for your time today, Tom. Super generous of giving up so much time.
Pleasure, anytime. Cool. Thanks very much.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Thank you so much, Tom, for your time, your interview, some incredible little nuggets of information and thoughts there. And one big thing I think about Tom now when I'm running, I'm listening to the birds and my feet. And he's very present, isn't he? He was very present in that talk. We had his full attention for a couple of hours. So thank you, Tom. You can find his coaching page on tomgarradcoaching.co.uk. If you think that he might be the guy for you, get in touch with Tom.
Upcoming races, another busy weekend.
Another busy weekend, not so much for Eddie, thank the Lord. But we've got the South Downs Way 50, the sort of opener, the Centurion opening opener season. I'm trying to think. I've been watching Bridgerton too. It's like a season ball. They always do a great preview. It's not out. I was waiting for it so I could give a shout out. But go over on their webpage and check it out. They always do like who's up, who's in their running, so that you can see. This race starts in Worthing, climbs up onto the South Downs Way, and then follows it all the way to Eastbourne, where it drops off the South Downs Way down a gully. You'd love that bit, Gary. It'd probably be your favourite bit. And then you run sort of a mile along to the track and you finish with 400 metres around the Eastbourne track. I've done this race twice, finished it once. The first time I did it was in this huge storm and I had to stop because I'd just had my second baby, who's now 10. Yeah. Bryn drove past, like supporting, and Rory was screaming in the back of the car. And Bryn was having such a time of it. And I was like, I couldn't do it. It was all my mothering instincts. Now I'd be like, get out of the way. Mummy's racing. But I came back a year later, stronger and faster and a bit more tuned into being a runner, not a mummy so much. And we'd learned a bit about crewing and the kids basically not being around when I was racing at the time. But it's such a good race. Good luck. I think they normally have about 350 people on the start line. I hope the weather is kind and the wind blows you all to Eastbourne.
I was thinking it must be quite a popular race because even before the podcast and listening to their stop start podcast that James does, this had kind of filtered its way up north.
Tom Evans has the men's course record and it's a really fast, even though it's really hilly, it's just under 2,000 metres. Yeah. Most of it, well, Tom will have run every step of that. Yeah. It's a really fast course, but it's also, being a Centurion event, super friendly to your newbies and your people that are just going to experience a 50-mile race.
We've got a fundraising race also that came up on SI entries. I saw it was the Race of the Cairn for Ukraine, and this is out of the Elan Valley Social Club, and event entries are still open, but as this show goes on Friday, you'll have to double check that. But yeah, it sounds like it's a really nice race, 10K walk or run, and like I say, raising money to support the people out in Ukraine, and it's a challenging fell and trail off-road route with 12,000 feet of ascent, which is pretty tasty over 10K. Ooh, so yeah, that sounds 6K. Awesome. Good luck, everybody, and I hope you raise a ton of cash.
Right, competition. So a couple of weeks ago, we posted about your breakfast pictures. What's your favourite breakfast? And you were in with a chance to win some delicious Geocharge peanut butter. We had some eclectic entries of all race. There was a lot of people that have very healthy, good breakfasts that I need to come and live with me and make my breakfast.
I love the overnight oats. That's a favourite of mine, the overnight oats.
I'm just amazed by people's, I think I just am not good in the morning for anything outside the box. But I think, yeah, your winner, definitely, she could come and live with me.
Oh, yeah. Jan Dawson, my goodness me. It was, as soon as I saw that, I just thought that it just sounds like a perfect breakfast. Yeah, buttermilk pancakes, berries, honey, fried bananas. Oh,
fried bananas. They used to be a thing when we were growing up. I remember my dad used to do us like a Saturday fry up and we used to have fried bananas.
Yeah, in the yeah. It sounded and looked delicious.
I went completely opposite because I felt this was more relatable to my sort of like morning diet. Mark Russell stuffing a chocolate eclair into his face. This is what he says he does before every ultra run. There's a picture of him fueling up before the Hardmores 55. We did a bit of research on you, Mark Russell. We were like, is this chocolate eclair the secret nutritional strategy we should all be doing for breakfast? We see you've done the rescheduled goat, then the Hardmores 55, and then the Lakes Traverse. Not something we perhaps should say is a healthy
3 weeks
way to approach racing every day. But you are obviously smashing it, you're finishing, and you're doing it on chocolate eclairs.
Yeah, I think I'm going to hit the eclairs from now on.
Bryn quite often as a chocolate eclair, as a little snack. I'm like, oh.
They wouldn't go that well in your race vest, though, would they, chocolate eclair?
Oh, no, well, Mark clearly downs a few.
They don't make it to the start line.
I'd love to know his. I wonder what his race nutrition is like. If he has an eclair before, he must have to keep on that sugar high throughout. Anyway, well done, Jan. Excellent healthy breakfast, Mark. We're just in awe of you. Give us a message, and we will get Tim to send you out some. Well, Mark, you might not be interested in the peanut butter. Maybe you'll spread that straight onto your eclair. Right, what's coming up, Gary? What are you doing?
Well, yeah, increasing the runs. Nothing to, you know, I'm never that fancy with my way I approach running. Just keep it nice and simple. Increasing the runs. I'm going to be more diligent with the strength and the form rolling. Like I said earlier, I think I look back on a time when I used to do more of that, and I've taken my eye off that. So trying to be more diligent with that. I hope you're big day in the lakes on Saturday, and a bit of the Old County Tops and a bit of the Lakeland 100 route. And I think if I get my way, it's going to be about 20 miles and 7,000 feet. So that will be pretty tasty. No filming. Well, I will be going with a bit of anxiety because I feel, you know, it's quite a big trip to go to the lakes. And I always think I want to film where I'm running and this and that. But it's just Neil and I running on the fells, and it's not really a train day. When you film, I always give a little insight into my films. So you're like, because you need to pretend that you're running past the camera or jumping over a puddle or something. So to do that, you've got to stop. You've got to go back. You've got to then run past the camera, then go back, pick everything up, check it's okay. And it literally turns what could be a 10-minute mile into a 20-minute mile, and it tortures the other runners. So
no, I think if I get my phone out of my pocket, like to take a picture, it's not a run. Like that's just a recovery run. I can't, I'm like, if I, and I never would set it up to take a picture. I just wouldn't have the time or the patience. Also,
yeah, but I'm trying to create content on it. It's different.
Yeah. You're doing your content. I'm like, who wants to see my big butt running around this?
But what I do is quite funny. When I do the films, I'll take a still from my movie.
Yes, yes.
And that was, who was that? One of our past guests did that. Rob.
Something that my oldest was teaching me, because he loves nothing better than if I can film doing some sort of backflip or something, and then he takes the still out of it.
Yeah.
This is so huge. You've taken some lovely pictures. There's some lovely ones, some like moody shots of you and Rex.
Oh, yeah.
You can stand back to the camera. Love it. Love it. I look forward to. Oh, so we won't. Maybe we just have one picture of you and Neil with your like arms wrapped around each other on the top of something.
We could recreate our Robinson cuddle.
Yes, that's what I was thinking. That's the one I think. I don't think you need to do that every run. Don't start.
Oh yeah, everyone. Every time we see each other, we greet each other. What about yourself, though? What are you doing?
Well, yeah, as we said, a quiet few days, just letting the body refill its rather empty cup. I'm seeing the physio again on the end of the week. And so I'll just see. I might sit on my bike in the next couple of days, but I'll see. We were going to go for the skiing is like, this is the last week, maybe next week. So hubby, Bryn and I wanted to have like one last little love ski together, but whether that will, bit nervous to put that ski bit on, whether that will happen or not, but I will do a little.
That'd be lovely.
We'll do a little bit of strength. But I tell you what, the last 2 days when I've been training, I've woken up in the morning and I've been like, oh, what a treat. I can just be normal.
Don't get used to it.
I know, that's the danger, isn't it? So hopefully this time next week when we're chatting, I'll be back on it. Eddie will be back on it, but I'm just going to enjoy a bit more sitting around in my old running leg. I've still got all my running kit on because I don't have any other clothes.
Yeah, me too. I've got my shorts on.
I was like, could get like dressed in normal clothes. I was like,
Oh no.
I just see if the jeans fit. Any reviews out there? Does anyone love us, Gary? I mean, you both need a bit of love this week.
We have, yeah. We've got a couple of reviews. Do you want to do, or we'll do one this week. We
don't have to do one, otherwise people will be like, those two. What is it? Their eagles are writing checks. Their bodies just can't cash right now.
Should I do it? Okay. Some dude person by Apple Podcasts, Great Britain, the 3rd of the 16th, 2022. Love this. I'm relatively new to trail running and have now discovered and have fallen in love with Hardmoor's events. Awesome. We should be on some commission with that. I'm in awe of ultra trail runners, but also love that they are normal. Well, normal-ish. People with jobs and families who can also do hard and amazing things. I have your podcast on whilst I'm plodding around Rydale in North Yorkshire. It keeps me going, makes me laugh, and wants me to buy new trail shoes. Brilliant. Oh, thanks for that. Like I say, I love people take the time to leave a positive review.
We only had one negative. We never got over that, have we, Gary? You've got to prepare yourself for the backlash. We've also just got one birthday shout out to one of my mates, Debbie Martin-Consani, friend of the show, winner of the Winter Spine 2022 edition. It's her birthday this week. Happy birthday, Debbie. We love you. We love you, man.
Happy birthday, Debbie. Ooh, that was episode 84. We're going to go straight into an interview and then a little break and then another interview. So super busy day to day. Thanks to our show sponsor, Cheer Charge, for their continued
support. Might be Cheer Charge bars for lunch this today, after all these things.
Yeah, I'll go through my little selection. Maybe I've got a Jaffa cake orange.
A little rustling mid-podcast interview of Gary just having a quick snack. Things have got a bit low.
But yeah, thanks, Cheer Charge. Thanks for all the 5-star reviews, and thanks to everyone who tunes in and listens to us every week. I really appreciate it. My name's Gary Thwaites.
I'm Eddie Sutton.
And let's run to the hills.